Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of One of the Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games that sometimes I put in one spot for you to peruse. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I'm Craig Campbell. I am the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I also make role-playing games. And I'm curious, what are you referring to? Like, you sometimes put them all in one spot. Are you talking about convention attendance?
Like a portfolio kind of thing. I don't know.
I gotcha. I was going to say, are you planning to, like, just go out and show up someplace with a pile of books?
Open up my trunk of my car that I don't have with all of my stuff inside.
Some local mall.
open up my trench coat and all of my games are inside.
Hey kid, want to see some games?
Want to see my portfolio?
This one's free. Anyway, we're here with Pete. Hi, Pete. Welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back. So I'm Pete Petruccia of Imagining Games, any award-winning game publisher of the Petru product line, might be how you know me. I also recently did the Designing TTRPGs for Dummies. I was the technical editor for that, and I'm the game designer for the new Ghost in the Shell RPG coming out by Mana Project Studios.
Wow, what a CV.
Yeah,
something else that could be in a portfolio.
But I'm still stuck in my head with the flash mob of people. They're game designers, and they just break out their trench coats. All the things they've done. It's just like covers of like just little thumbnail covers of games and, you know, PDFs and.
There's what we're doing for Eddie's next year. Not fancy Eddie's trench coat.
Oh my gosh! If we had like big musical entrances, like the Oscars or something.
Yes.
Well, it has to be big musical Oscars entrances, or it has to be like professional wrestling. Walk on music.
Where it's there you go.
And everybody screams and yells.
Video packages. Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
We're not talking about designing really, really cool award ceremonies today, though. We're talking about.
We missed the boat.
I know. Okay. We'll start over. We're talking about that today.
They don't know what we're talking about yet. Let's just.
They don't, but they'll be like, why was Jess talking about portfolios?
Yeah. We would really have undercut you because you were so witty off the bat that Craig was like, what the heck are you talking about? Like,
the true wit is when your wit asks.
Yeah, true wit.
Craig, what are we talking about? Get us on topic, please.
We're talking about portfolios. Design and publishing, or like anybody, we might talk a little bit about like kind of anybody in the, you know, working in the RPG industry and having some sort of a portfolio or a representation of your work to help you find work or to get your foot in the door if you haven't found actual paying work yet, in different ways that you can do that. This is going to be an interesting discussion because this has been on our list of potential topics for a while, and Pete selected it. So Jess and I were talking. We're like, well, I sure hope Pete has a lot to say about it because
that's funny.
Neither one of us has technically a true portfolio.
It was one of those, right? It's been there's the laundry list of topics, and it's the one sitting there since the last time I was here.
Yeah.
Maybe it was there, and I was like, no, I don't know, but it percolated this whole time.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we have the guests choose from a list of topics or suggest something is because Jess and I can take time to adapt to it, but we'd rather have the guests come in and be like, oh, this is something that really interests me, and we don't just like give you a topic that's not terribly interesting to you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. But you don't want people talking about shit they don't care about. Like, just don't do that.
Pete, given that you've branched further into kind of working on games on a larger scale for other publishers, like you even talked about with Ghost in the Shell. Like, give us a rundown of what it is that kind of intrigues you and why you chose the portfolio topic, and what you've, and then we kind of maybe start kind of with what you've done and thoughts that you have, and then we'll just kind of branch out from there and talk about it until we can't talk about it anymore.
So I want to take the angle that you mentioned there. But the first thing I wanted to mention was clearly that one of the reasons I gravitated towards it is maybe since the end of 2024, but really maybe the last 2 years, I get a lot more pitches than I used to, especially when it comes to like Gen Con time or like PAX Unplugged time. I just start getting a bunch of them and, you know, just emails. And So this has been something that's been new and exciting, right? These things happen once in a while for years. Like occasionally somebody kind of floats a little thing, but doesn't really like, hey, Imagining Games, like, got this thing, you should check it out, I think you'll like it. No, seriously, can I, you got 15 minutes, you know, where they come at you like, I want this. And Craig, you know, like, we've been doing this for about the same amount of time. So I know you're in the same place where you start seeing this, and it just like, it is something that you're very proud of too, that people are actually like starting to knock on the door, right? But as a game designer, which for the three of us and also like the whole indie game developer network that we grew out of, like we've all made this transition over time, like as in we've all been a designer first and then like mostly publishing our own stuff and then looking across the pond at other people doing, you know, other people's things and then kind of transitioning over time. And it's a whole beautiful growth thing that kind of happens with experience and, you know, perseverance, I guess. But as a designer, one of the reasons I thought this was interesting and exciting is because we don't have like a LinkedIn. Like, we don't have like this. Well, there are always new upstarts.
We don't have Google
like,
Plus anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Like where you share this stuff. And I feel like, you know, like the IGDN, for example, we're like, hey, this is how you do a sell sheet. Like that kind of stuff is starting to be more formalized. But still, it's a bit of the Wild West when it comes to like, I'm a designer and I have a portfolio. I mean, even honestly, like if you're an artist, or I like that you branched out to graphic designers and freelancers of all kinds, sensitivity consultant, you know, there's all these roles. And what does a designer need? And in this case, what's cool too, is we can also talk about what does the publisher want to see? So that's like the two major viewpoints here. Mm-hmm. Because as a designer, you know, one is obviously getting accolades helps, right? Everybody likes a track record because especially as a publisher and growing into more of a publisher, you keep losing time. Like you just spend time in logistics and getting people to distribute and shipping and fulfillment, all kinds of crap beyond just making games and trying to make more games. And then there's more people involved and then they need more time and there's more meetings and all this stuff. So helping publishers like find you, know what they need to know about you is like the real trick. And you don't always, like in my case, I've had a lot of success of meeting people like in person and building relationships, which is obviously ideal if you are in the right places at the right time. And sometimes it can seem like you have to be at the right place at the right time for things. But if you are, you know, networking and you are making time in any which way that you can, whether it's Discord channels or in person at conventions or emails or volunteering or playtesting or freelancing, I mean, you're building rapport. And these relationships, as people stay in the industry, they go on to do things. And if you want to be involved in things they're doing, you may get golden opportunities just because we're all getting opportunities. So the first thing there is obviously, right, like build a network, grow, help people and help them help you, right? So I've been a big product of that, like that kind of success. When it comes to portfolio though, I haven't really ever had to be like, hey, here is my sheet of stuff, look at it, this is what I want you to publish or this is what I want you to know about me before I go do a thing. So in that case, like Craig, I know you've done a lot more freelancing than I have. Mm-hmm. Like, has it all been word of mouth? Have you ever had to like, hey, here's some background stuff, like things, hey, look at these PDFs. Because that's, I get that a lot of like, hey, here's some of my, you know, relative work.
Well, it's some of it's been like it initially started with like I was laid off many, many years ago. This is 2000, geez. Anyway,
perfect. Yeah, I was gonna say that's well, what you no, do. I mean, actually, like,
the freelancing began in '99, and there was a big bump up in it in 2009, where I was laid off, and I was like, I got a lot of time, and so I knew some people in the industry, and so they got me started on a couple things, and then they gave my name to other people, and who gave my name to other people, and it kept going like that. But I have done a little bit of the like active kind of pitching myself or like trying to provide, you know, information to people who are interested in potentially working with me. And it has been sometimes queried by the other, you know, like they asked, it was like, I should say, sometimes it's been like a conversation and sometimes it's been where like, you know, we got talking and then I sent them like, you know, a sample or two of something that I designed for whatever. Like the work that I did on Iron Kingdoms, I did some freelance work there, came out of having known somebody. We were writing paired articles for a dungeon article, you know, dungeon magazine project. We had like paired articles. And so we got to know each other that way. And then this guy, Matt Gates, was doing work for Iron Kingdoms, and he reached out to me and he's like, well, I know you wrote this one thing. And so I sent him a couple of other things. So, but then also like, you know, with, there was a point where I was doing some basic D&D freelancing and, I got approached, I was actually at a convention and I got a chance to kind of hang around with Chris Sims, who was my, at the time was my developer and editor, or not editor, but my developer. He was the, you know, like the person I worked with, the producer developer. And I got my like FaceTime with Chris Perkins very briefly. Sims introduced me to him, and Perkins asked me like, what's your favorite thing you wrote? And I pitched pitched the thing that I was like in my head, in my Rolodex, in my mind, I was like, what can I dump on him that is easy to describe, but is going to actually maybe wow Chris Perkins, who has seen a lot of stuff. You know, he's been involved in D&D for a long time. And so I pitched this little idea that I had, like this little side trek quest thing that had to do with a nightmare that was passed down genetically. It went from mother to daughter to daughter to daughter. And he was intrigued by that idea. He was like, I've never thought of the idea of a nightmare being like passed down from parent to child. And that turned into working with Chris Perkins and doing more Dragon and Dungeon magazine kind of stuff. There's been a little bit of it. And then it's a lot of times it's been just people who have gotten to know some of my work approaching me, like you, Pete, for example.
Yeah.
Asking me to do some a supplement deck for Rest in Pieces.
It's nice to also have things like the IGDN, right? You have groups where people can be like, hey, kind of open call.
And in the indie realm, this is something anybody who's listening to keep in mind too. The indie realm, we love stretch goals of like mini adventures and mini settings that are written by all these different people. So that's a great way to kind of get your feet wet. And if you can just like show a little something that you've done, and be posting that or providing a website or a blog or wherever it is that you can kind of present that material, like somebody will find that and be like, oh, this person does some kind of interesting things. Maybe they want to do a 2000 word mini adventure for my, you know, funky niche indie game that I'm going to kickstart in 6 months.
Craig, did you ever have, you know, kind of like you get your foot in the door by one person and then they're like, okay, and then this person will reach out to you. Because I know that sometimes that's a thing too, where like the first person's like vouches for you, but then the second person's like, all right, great, but I need some resources, like show me some of your stuff. Sometimes then it's weird because you kind of got it, but you still have to kind of have the portfolio, like have some kind of answer.
Yeah, it has happened. A lot of it happened within, in my freelancing, a lot of it happened within D&D. So it was really just getting people, pointing people to things that they just didn't know I was the person who wrote it. So like, oh, there's this thing in Dragon from 6 months ago and I wrote that. So they could go find it. I didn't have to provide it necessarily.
Oh, that's nice.
It's all Wizards people.
It's in your thing.
You
know,
you published it.
Yeah.
But there have been occasionally. Go ahead, Jess, on yours too. Like,
yeah, Jess, tell us.
Oh yeah, mine was fairly recent. It was within the last couple of years. So I make a lot of friends within game designer, like locally, and you know, obviously online and via conventions. And just like you were saying, Pete, like that networking part is so important. You have to make friends and you have to be social with people who are within your career, no matter what career you have. If you have like a sort of professional style career where those connections are important, that's
how people want to work with you, right?
Yeah.
And you're good. They will, right?
They want to make sure that you're a nice person, a sensible person, someone who's easy to get along with. Because if you're not easy to get along with in a social sphere, you're not going to be easy to get along with at work, and they're going to be working with you. And then they like you, so they want to do nice things for you, just like you said. That's just the way life is. Is that fair? No, but it is the way that humans are. So in Chicago, there is a little group that gets together once a month. We just kind of like sit around at a restaurant. Pete, you've been.
Yeah. Get our little thing at the Exchequer Pub if you're a Chicagoite.
Yeah, it's really fun, and we talk sometimes about games, sometimes about other stuff, a lot of times about other stuff. And one of the people there introduced me, recommended me to Edge Studio for freelancing because he knew that they were looking for some freelancers for a new project. We went to Gen Con, so I had to do another step of networking. So
Yeah.
I already knew one person. Went to Gen Con, met another person. And then it was a third person who was actually the person who hired me on. And throughout that process, one of the questions that they asked was, "What's your favorite thing you've ever written or designed?" You
That's
should be
crazy. It's a
prepared.
good question. It's a really good one.
You should be prepared with that. Yeah. I can see why someone would ask that question. I mean, it gets them to know, like, what kind of stuff do you like to write? What's your passion? Can you explain yourself
I say that a
well?
lot
Like,
to artists. I want to know what
yeah.
they want to draw
Yeah.
because I can't pay you top dollar amongst all industries. I could pay you good for the RPG industry, but that could be bad for the video game industry, you know? So in those
Yeah.
lines, I'm always like, what do you want to draw? Or if I find an artist that's got an Instagram and they're drawing stuff that's not what they're talking, what they're selling, I'm like, oh, they want to draw that. And
Yeah.
like, sweet, that's exactly what I need. So sometimes that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's like an interview question too. Like, that's a sneaky interview question in a non-interview,
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Like, send us proof that you can write and string a sentence together. And because I had a person vouch for me, because I'd met somebody in person, and because I've written stuff in the past, I did have a I already had a bit of a freelancing portfolio. I was able to get on their project for Arkham Horror, and that was really, really fun. And now I have future opportunities just because I've done that. So once
100%.
you, so I think the thing that would have screwed me over if I hadn't been prepared for it would have been, number one, not being able to answer the question, what's my favorite thing that I've ever written or that I've done. If I had stumbled on that question, I might have, like, lost my confidence, and I might not have, like, put my best foot forward. I would have felt a little awkward. I don't know if that would have ruined it. Like, that would have been a stumbling block, not being prepared for the types of questions that publishers and other people who are looking to hire you might ask you. And then number two, not having a writing sample ready to go for the type of work that I'm looking for. Now, that's really, like, my first ever freelancing job was I didn't have anything that I had ever, like, published in role-playing games. This is back in, like, 2015 or something like that, about 10 years ago. And luckily, I mean, it was a friend, so someone who already knew me, again, networking.
It's
And
not a huge industry. So, I mean, like,
yeah.
that's one of the things we say a lot is that if, right, hey, if you're a dick, people will learn because they'll
Yeah.
talk and they'll be like, hey, oh, that guy? Like, don't talk to that guy. That guy sucks, you know?
Yeah. This person didn't fulfill their project on time either, is another,
Yeah.
like,
And people go through things. So sometimes you hear stuff and you can't take it all on, you know, one story. But yeah, over time, if a handful of people say it, there's probably been more than one incident. Because we do
freeze
stressful
a
things too.
pattern.
And as
Yeah.
creatives, we run into, you know, all kinds of imposter-like issues of like, is this good? Is it good enough? You know? So.
But yeah, my first ever one, I also had to send in a writing sample, but I already had written a lot. Like, I liked to write on my free time. I enjoyed writing things. I had written a lot in, I was just fresh out of college then too. So I had stuff from college. I had stuff from after college that I had already written. I had stuff ready to go, even though it wasn't, like, officially published. And even though that was my friend, someone I had known for at that point, like, 9 years or something. They still wanted to make sure, like, I know Jess, but can Jess actually write? Like, and yeah, I can. I can put a sentence together. And I think that that's like making sure you have that groundwork there. So if you're looking to get, like, a game portfolio design, even if you don't have your games published, or, like, it's really easy to publish your games, just publish them on Itch, like, put something
Yeah,
together.
exactly. I
Get
get
that
those.
together now. You have to show your passion now. It's not doing free work. It's honing your craft and showing that you're passionate about something, and then also having that, like, you're essentially creating your portfolio as you're doing that, so you have something ready to go. And also making sure that when you do the project that you do publish, that you keep a copy of it. to put in your portfolio, which is
I think
something I'm really bad at.
You also kind of stated something that's the obvious that we should cover, which is like what story beats are we trying to hit in this like one session game, right? This one shot is the portfolio is like, I'm looking to see if you can do the job, right? Like if you can get things done and if you're good. Like that's like what I'm looking at is like, and by good, I mean like a fit for the project. Because whether you're a game designer, we all have our biases as a player, as a consumer of this hobby, and as a designer or publisher, like as a team of like what we like in games. So we want that, which may or may not be you and may or may not say anything about like how good you are as a quality artist or game designer or writer or editor, because there's so much style to the substance of every level of this that is just like two people can be suited for a job. One person will like one over the other because of their own preferences. So that's just really important to like say across the board. That's why a lot of times, like we say, when you do make a portfolio or something, if you're pitching to like, I don't know who this company person is, you're really hoping, right, that like you got something that catches their eye. And that's why this portfolio becomes important, to have something a little more comprehensive, because it's a shot in the dark. If they're looking for something, you know that they're going to give you more time of day as they look over all of these things for more review. There's plenty of times where I get like somebody who gives me a little something writing wise. And if I see something in it, I'll ask for more information. And I'll say, okay, I'm looking for humor. And I may not tell them I'm looking for humor, but I'll be like, hey, do you have any pieces that kind of have this, this, and this? Because sometimes you get technical writing. And I'm like, no, I want to see what you, when you write with personality, or when you write and you try to dumb it down, or when you write and you try to talk sophisticated. So depending on the project, the style is just always a big thing.
And you can kind of be prepared for that with like, if you want to have a portfolio, we've talked about, you know, like we can start to talk about a little bit too about like where you put that stuff, like how you how you have it ready to present. You could have a website where you've literally got pages with information. There might be stuff like if you're, you know, into a particular game and you just write your own stuff for it in a blog or whatever, that's, you can point people to that as examples of your work. You could also have, like, if you've got one of those little pages set up for yourself that has just allows you to have links to different things, one of your links could be to like a portfolio download. Or like, here's a few PDF pages of me like writing about really imaginative and interesting NPCs. And here's me describing a really cool location. And here's one where I write up a couple of encounters in an adventure. Like, you don't even have to have completed pieces. It can just be like samples of like, I can imagine up really cool science fiction stuff. You know, I can mash together all the best science fiction and come up with something new, or spin it something in a direction that maybe not a lot of people have seen. Or, you know, there's a lot of different things. With me, because I was doing a lot of freelancing early on that just got passed from person to person, it was a lot of completed work that I was showing people. But it doesn't have to be. It can literally be just like little samples.
Especially when it's writing. You know, sometimes I find artists too who I like, they'll give me cards or approach. I'll find them online and then I'll see something that they did and go, what the hell is that? And it's because one piece is so incredible and everything I know about them isn't to that par. And another thing that's worth asking is, what's the difference? Because I've asked artists, you know, what's the difference between this piece and this piece? Basically just being like, as a person who hires artists, it's like, oh, I spent a lot more time on that one. And I was, you know, but like, it's good to know if you're an artist with a portfolio, show the pieces you spent a bunch of time on, because like, you can be worse than that. But like, I found an artist that was funny that it was basically like, oh, they had done a lot of art for whether it was a card game or something that had something like a lot of art, like a card game. And it was all decent, but it wasn't the level that I was like, oh, I have to find this artist and get to them. And then when I met them in person later, they showed me a piece that I was like, this is what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah,
so I still keep that around with me, like to remember, like go back to that artist someday. But there was work that I would have offered them that I didn't, because I don't try to grab somebody, especially as artist, right? Like that I don't, a writer, I feel like we can grow together, right? But as an artist, I'm not an artist to help you grow as an like illustrator.
Yeah.
So I might be able to give you direction, but sometimes, I mean, you both probably speak to that too, where you don't always know that your art direction is always helping, you know, because sometimes you're like, did I make that piece a little worse because I was overcomplicating or adding things, or, you know, but anyway.
Yeah, for I, all, I have, I've only, Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have asked, if I have artists that I've used a lot, I have asked them after a few projects to be like, does my art direction suck? Or like, is this good? Is this what you want? Yeah. Is this useful to you? And, you know, I try to hone that. So we can improve that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it is sometimes difficult to ignore our own impulses to get like overly descriptive or make too many artistic decisions.
Yeah.
As opposed to just telling them what the piece should evoke and what it should, you know, what the right. subject should
and
be.
As a publisher, you're doing. Like, oh, I really need three figures in this scene. And, you know, just
and I need an overhead. I want an overhead angled down view, 30 degrees off plane. And, you know, like, yeah, like that's probably a bit much. Sorry, Jess.
When we did Means of Magic, we hired an art director because we're like, oh, we want a thing. Yeah. We want a thing, but we don't. We're bad at art, me and Alex. We don't know it. We don't know. We're art appreciators, but not art makers.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a huge thing, right?
We asked for portfolios for art directors too. We hired an art director, Aaron Radney. He had never done art direction for an RPG before and wanted to. And we were really, really happy with it because then Aaron just did all of the stuff. Aaron did all that for us and was able to give better critique and feedback. We got some amazing artists out of that and some amazing pieces of art. And kind of the same like idea and process. Aaron was in the process of building up a different kind of portfolio for himself to be an art director. So like projects like starting in with the indie scene, if your goal is to eventually work for Wizards of the Coast and you want to be like I want to do this big thing, you have to start by building up your portfolio with more Aaron used a great word. It's been a couple of years since he used it, but I can't remember. Not apprentice, but like there's a word he used. It was so good. I can't remember.
Journeyman comes after apprentice.
Journeyman. Thank you, architect.
Yes, architect who knows the different levels of trades.
I thought the word just didn't say it out loud because I was like, there's something on the tip of the tongue. I thought it was something different. Yeah.
You start off with those. You're building up your portfolio as you go, improving yourself, and all at the same time you're showing like you're improving, you're learning more. I think that's all part of the process. I've seen some people who jump up really fast in the industry, and usually that's due to their like very, very superior networking skills. They're like very, very charismatic and cool people. Yeah. And also competent people. Also you have to have both in order to do stuff like that, but most people have to work up over a couple of years, like building up that portfolio and kind of showing proof, because there's a lot of people out there. So how do you, like, what are some of the things that you could do as a freelancer or a game designer, like if you wanted to work with certain companies? How are you showing, what are you doing that's going to elevate you above the crowd?
Yeah, just to make sure we're covering our bases, kind of leading up to what you're saying here is, yeah, I don't think that you're in like tabletop, especially like RPGs, when a portfolio needs to show like some work, but it doesn't need to show a lot. Like a lot doesn't mean anything. If anything, concise is good, right? It doesn't have to be perfect. It's not like a pitch. You know, you're not like getting this like 30-second elevator pitch. I don't need that. But I just need to get a feel for who you are, what some of the stuff you've done, what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you have rates, great. But I understand, especially with freelancers, like that's always just an issue, right? And especially when you're dealing with publishers, a lot of times they're going to come, they're probably more of the expert on these things, right? To come back at you. But, you know, if you know things like bottom dollar, these kinds of things, like that doesn't hurt, because that can be like a, oh, cool, well, you're great, but I know right off the bat, if we can't work out money, that's all we're doing, right? Like, so... But you just need some work. And I think with like what Craig mentioned earlier is, you know, it's better to have a variety if you can, like show a couple, three things. And I don't mean like, you know, dozen, like, but if you could have like two or three things when it comes to like game design or writing, like three different styles of writing or two different styles, because we do so much that's technical and then so much that's creative and fiction or narrative. So a lot of times, like, that's the big two. I want to see like how you would write a scene you know, or something in game, like descriptive, and something which can be fiction, you know, and then something that's more technical. I like to see attitude. That's usually the one I'm kind of asking for, is like, give something with more of your personality in it, like when you get to write, to like talk as you or something. But I think as an up and coming designer, you're often always like so worried about like your accolades, right? Like your list of credits, like, you know, what have you done with your existence in this industry? And that's really not as important. It's just kind of like, if you can give some looks, even if it's like you have one game, you know, like show me three different facets of this game, right? Like, in like what, like mechanically, what you're proud of, like what characters get to do. And think about like what we, especially if you know, like most publishers were game designers, because like they eventually had to publish because they just kept growing into the business. So knowing that, like what would they appreciate? Like if you kind of game design for designers a bit, like you can talk about stuff that's maybe a little high-minded, and they'll bring you back down to like what the consumer wants, but like you can, you know, woo them. So I think that kind of leads right into what you were talking about, is that if they can kind of open the door to start a conversation, and we're, I don't know, at least me, I'm like, if somebody reaches out, I try to say, at least respond to everybody. And I usually ask some follow-up at least. There's been some that slip through just because it's like I'm preparing for PAX or something, and maybe they don't know, but I'm like, I got three, and they're like, it's PAX, and you know, and then before you know it, I'm like, and occasionally it'll be like a month later, and I'm like, I just wanted to make sure I said hi. I didn't want to, do you think I'm blowing you off or something? But we always say, like, know who you're pitching to, right? And you don't know maybe the person, but you know the company. Like, what do they make? If you've heard them on a podcast, you know, mention stuff too, of like, if you're a fan, if you like their games, what you like about their stuff. I'm always telling people to volunteer for companies, you know, but like, just because there's such a long history in this, even, you know, Monty Cook and stuff, that like everyone, so many people got their start because they started because they helped freelance write in a pinch, or they jumped on and helped at a convention booth, or, you know, they just kind of got around other people. But yeah, so finding opportunity is partly paying attention and reaching out, even if it's because I one of my guys on my team, you know, he's been, from the day he like first showed up at conventions, has been like, I'm gonna go meet Mike Pondsmith. I know Cody Pondsmith. I know Lisa. I know, like, you know, he's just like really in good with Artel Sorian. And that, because he, like, as a kid, he kind of just dreamed of like, can I work on Cyberpunk? And then, you know, we had Edgerunners come out, and he was infatuated. And so yeah, make yourself known, be around, be helpful if you can. And then you know, show your interest, right? It almost feel like it's like dating.
No, that's huge. Showing your interest is huge, because
Don't get
then
friend zoned right away.
I mean, but I'm at like showing your interests, like showing, like letting people know what you do like that Cyberpunk example you just
Oh,
gave,
yeah.
Dave. Like, oh, this person has been talking about their absolute passion for this random anime that they love, and well, look, I just learned about
We're
this
in.
IP, that the IP for this random anime is being turned into an RPG. I gotta contact that person, otherwise now I'm a shitty friend. Like that's how you learn about those, or that's how people are like, oh, this person knows so much about Star Wars, for example.
You know, and that helps. Yeah, like, because you, I with Chew, I've been that publisher, and one of my favorite guys right now, AJ Suffity, you know, for example, he just came up to the booth and was like, I'm a huge Chew fan, and I'm like kind of interested in getting into the industry. And he was more had more of a foot in the door than he let off at the time. But at the same point, was I was like, gosh, I'm so late in this project, and like, you know, the late in the development of it, that like, I one of the things I'm struggling with is I can't add new people that don't know the comics. Like, it just can't. Like, nobody can help me if they have no reference to the source material. And they, like you're saying, you sometimes like just being like, hey, I love Invincible. You know, I know everything about Invincible. And I also write. If you go to Tomas over at Free League, and it's like, you know, the ninth hour, he might be like, shit, get over here. We need, you know, we had three people fell over and this person to the hospital. And, you know, like before you know it, you're like, I'm writing for Invincible, you know, so.
Definitely worth including that sort of thing, you know, in your resume, your portfolio, so to speak. You know, they in the resume, or you know, you talk about it as like your special skills, like your other things that are a
Oh, yeah.
little less, but or special interests and things too. You can do, you like I could see you having that little download or having a web page where it gets into, I'm you know, I'm a huge fan of this, 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 and this. So like that way, if the company that licenses one of those things, like you've made it clear that you're very knowledgeable, that you're very into it. And it can go beyond like just media for stuff that's licensed. Like if you are a person who is super up to speed on like real world medieval weaponry and armor, that's something that you, that's a passion that you love and you've studied it and you've got books on it that you've read and all this sort of thing. Like that's something that like certain game producers and designers and publishers will be like, oh, good Lord, like bring in somebody that knows their way around to write the equipment section of my super crunchy game.
Look at Tristan Zimmerman. I bug Tristan all the time. You know, hey, Tristan, I need Navy ranks, you know, just because I don't know military stuff. Right. Like, yeah, there are people that like your interests could one day be the reason some publisher knocks at your door, right? Virtually, right? Or, you know, your expertise is why then other people start to rely on you. And eventually, if they rely on you enough, like what's that Nations game? Nations and something. They locked up Tristan for that. They were like, this guy knows all about history and we're making a colonial game. Like, ask enough questions of Tristan before you know it, they're like, we should give this guy a job. Like, he's going to stop giving us freebies.
The question I liked, I'm not like really in a position as I'm still just a self-publisher and then a freelancer for other people. We're not publishing other people's work really. And I don't hire a lot of people right now. But a question I like to ask other designers, especially when I'm connecting them to other people, is what their white whale of design is as well. Mm. So like, what are you trying to do?
When you say that, do you mean the one they haven't finished?
The one they can't quite latch on to yet. Like what? Like
the dream. The dream.
What is your white whale? Like, again, that's like another way to ask what your goal is, and sure, really knowing what your goals are as a writer, as a designer, as a anything, helps other people know, because you know what your goals are, but it helps other people know like where they should be connecting you. That's a thing that I really like about, again, being in the IGDN or just knowing a lot of other game designers and being friends with them, is that we want to help other people do cool stuff and get more cool games, and they want to see you succeed. And you got to give them the tools to help them succeed. So, I mean, that's kind of what we've been talking about the whole time, really. but yeah, what's your white whale of design? What's your favorite thing you've ever written?
I think part of that is also just passion, right? Mm-hmm. And when it comes to creative work, we're all doing this in a way. I mean, growing up, I feel like people are always like, you could do something that helps people, or you could do something that makes more money. Well, it's kind of like similar in this industry of like, hey, people who are spending their most of us, it's the second, third job kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's because we love it. So especially publishers, like we have a lot of people who come in and out working, whether it's freelance on this or that, but it's the ones that go the extra mile. And usually the best indicator of that is just straight up passion, right? Mm-hmm. If someone is really into the project, they'll give you more. And I don't say more for less, because that's the easy way to say it, but it's not the right way to say it, is that they're just going to go above and beyond. And as any kind of owner, leader, right? You have people who carry their own weight, and that's fine. But the people who can, you know, like go above and beyond of like if you can delegate something to somebody and you know that they're going to do a bang up job that doesn't take you a lot of times or several reviews afterwards, like that's just invaluable. Like it's just you meet those people and you don't let them go, you know, because you're like, I can tell this person I want this. And they're not just going to write it and like word for word be counting every word and maybe, you know, like, and that's okay. Like all that stuff within reason's okay. But it's that like, they're going to like come to points and be like researching things, just Googling things and then finding other things. So like terminology that fits that like culinary with chew or something. And you're going to see stuff. And as an editor or reviewer or developer, you're going to be like, where did that come from? And then they're going to blow you away when they were like, oh, I was looking this thing up and I went down this rabbit hole. And you're just, that's the kind of stuff that like really impresses people. Cause you're like, you just proved to me that you went above and beyond, right? It wasn't just what was on the top of your head in one sitting, you know, like that sometimes it is. And so yeah, finding people with passion.
Yeah. And from a work perspective, from a getting paid for work perspective, like doing that gives you leverage with the people to say, you know, down the road, like, let maybe adjust my rate.
100%.
And that makes you more valuable.
And that guy later tells you the rate that they want to have. And you have always been like, oh, that's a little high. You go, not for this guy, is it? You're right. That's not, you know, you're worth it. I didn't think people were worth that, but you're I think I'm sold. Yeah. It's, that's how we grow too.
Have either of you ever had someone reach out and ask you for feedback on how they're promoting themselves or on their portfolio? I've never, like, again, the idea of like a full portfolio, I don't have one. I have all of my stuff is in random places and I would have to actively assemble it. I know what I would put in there, but no one's ever approached me to ask it, like, oh, how am I doing? Like, what feedback would you give me on promoting myself?
So there's two things there. I'm going to try to remember that first thing I was thinking of, which is just like, what is the range of what people give you? Because that's part of something worth mentioning, just because it's like, is it a nice, neat portfolio? No, it's never really that. It's a whole range of things, right? But with what you were saying was that, can you remind me, what were you saying exactly? Was that not that, because I started thinking about what's the perfect thing again? What was that? What did you just say?
The white whale.
The white whale.
No.
Is that what you're talking about?
Like just a second ago, what were you talking about? Like just.
Oh. Right. has anyone ever approached you for like.
Oh, how am I doing?
Yeah, how, yeah.
Yeah. So especially when you do work with a person, often what happens is kind of like Craig said, you get that person who's done one little thing for you and they either like you or they just appreciate you or, you know, whatever, or mentor or, you know, these kinds of things. You start building relationship, right? So I get a lot of those people who then start being like, hey, Pete, can you look at this? Or, hey, what do you think of this? Or does this sound fishy? You know, they'd start, you know, talking shop of like, this guy offered me this for that. So are you asking like how you would handle it or?
Yeah. Well, if you've ever had that happen and then if not, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you do the best you can. You try to remember that you're not the only fish in the sea and that publishers are different, just like designers are different. And we're all learning. Like one of the nice things about us having grown up through the IGDN is we saw so much through, we get a lot of ideas of how all kinds of people are thinking. Like in this industry that is one lone designer, like in, I don't know, Indiana, I'll pick up my own state, right? That, you know, you wouldn't have that. It wouldn't be within earshot, right? You just wouldn't be in your sphere of influence. So it helps me a lot of times when I feel strongly about something to try to step back and go, hey, but this person maybe is not quite there yet with this. You know, or they don't trust people enough with that. Like a good one is like when people tell me NDAs, like I've always been, I kind of grew through this process of like, hey, NDAs are kind of stupid in RPGs. I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but because if anything, there's so many good ideas. It's the execution, right? And the ability to do anything with the, you know, good idea. Like if you have the license, right? Or something like, but it's not that there's not enough like great ideas. So there are people sometimes who are like, this game, everything's an NDA, everything's hidden, everything's like, got to go to this sheet and sign this and whatever. And I'm like, I'm such a preacher of like the Fred Hicks, like viewpoint of like, no, go tell everyone what you're working on. Show them everything.
I do that
as long as I'm doing a decent job as a publisher, like there shouldn't be that many horror stories. I mean, we might have, you know, misunderstanding or disagreement, but other than that, like, that's all good press. You know, you have people that like you and want to see what you're doing and you're sharing what you're doing with us. Like those are backers and consumers and we're all people who eat this shit up. So, you know, like you share it everywhere. So,
The NDA thing only like makes sense for me when you're like trying to keep things under wraps because you're like going to have a big reveal for some, like maybe, but that's only for like a big IP or something.
Yeah, and we're not an industry that's like that big. Like that, we don't have, and it's not like you can't just go whip up a role playing game tomorrow. I mean, now I guess with AI, you can, but faster than ever before. But before it was like, you need to write a book. Like nobody's like beating you to write in the book for the thing that you already started on. And then when they do, it doesn't sell like hotcakes no matter what it is. Because like my analogy is always like, I can put a basketball in your hand. It is a consumer. You know everything you need to make this purchase. But a role-playing game, I can get you like 60% there. because in your head you're like, will I read this? Do I have a group? Will they play it? Will this sit on my shelf? What, you have all these reasons of why this may not be a good fit for you right now. I can't get you past that. I mean, so it's yeah. We're not worried about people running away with our great idea usually. But then I step back and go, who is this person? You know, like maybe they haven't thought about it like this, you know, so, hey, like mention this to them, say that, you know, like, but do the thing if it's not going to like hurt you in any way. Right. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with is you're just giving advice. You just try to give sound advice. Right. And you try to get your feet in their shoes and help them. And hopefully by helping them, you're helping yourself too. Right. Because we're just one big happy family. Like we're all networking. And if you like them enough that you keep talking to them, hopefully you like them to make that they're not just bothering you about it. Right. Because there are sometimes people that you're like, I don't plan to keep working with you, but it's not that I don't like you. So I don't. Sometimes yeah. You do just get people who ask for feedback. I think this is maybe more what you were going for, is like an artist, for example,
yeah.
who kind of gets the idea like, oh, we're not a good fit right now. And then they'll follow up with like, who do you think would be a good fit? Or do you have any recommendations? I do this too with people. Like when I find an artist that, you know, we just know right off the bat, like money's not going to be enough. That like, hey, do you have any recommendations? Because sometimes they do. And artists want to help out artists, just like writers are helping out writers. And so people have circles and helping them know like, hey, I think ninth level would be a good fit for what you have here, because they have this system. And if you're okay with like changing what you kind of homebrewed here to that, they would probably eat this up. If you don't want to do it, you know, then maybe take it over to this group, because I think they make games like that. And I think that's kind of, if you're just shot in the dark, find the publisher that makes the thing you want to make, right? Because they're more likely to be receptive to it. But I get a lot of investigative games, you know, and I'm like, no, I don't want that. Like, I have a investigative game, and when people want to play investigative, I want them to play that one.
I want them to play the one that I made.
yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not trying to like every year be like, hey guys, you like that last one? Here's the new one. You know, investigate again. You know, so. I mean, I guess, right, like Gumshoe. Like Gumshoe was doing that, right? That was their shtick, but.
Yeah, I think like the thing with that, if you're shopping around for someone to publish your game, especially, or you're shopping around for someone to publish your adventure, and you do that for some time, and you know, that length of time that you're comfortable shopping it around is up to you personally. I know where my limit would be. But I'm an impatient person. After that point, you just have to publish it. And now that's like, okay, publish it, move on, like put it on itch, like I said, like put it out there in some form. Your writing samples and your art samples and everything like that, your AP samples, everything like that is more valuable as someone who's looking to hire you if it is published than if it was just like, yeah, this is in my Google Drive. It's a more Google Drive lowest.
Just because it's in my notebook. And it shows they can follow through.
Yeah. Then self-publishing. Then I published with somebody else. That's on the top. Like if you can show that you've published with somebody else, like that is more valuable than it's just like, here's something that I wrote. At some point you should move on. And build something else to pitch around, because someone might just not like it. It might not be what people are looking for right now. You might have missed the trend, because as much as I don't like it, our industry does also have trends, just like traditional publishing, for sure. Like books.
And you might not be aware of what else is out there. That's a big one too, is a lot of times designers, especially, you know, I'm focusing more on game designers here, is that they'll pitch you something and you're like, well, there's this and that. And like, you know, for example, like if I get another heist game, I'm like, okay, beat Blades, you know, like do better than that. Like, or if it's more traditional, if it feels more like Gumshoe, you know, they're just like, there's elements of, if I see the game and I don't think I would pick this one that exists over it, you know, that's a big part of it, is I have to believe that I wouldn't have already picked something out better, you know, or that I like something better than what you have here. Again, that goes to taste, but sometimes people are not aware of what's on the market. And I get that too, you know, as a publisher, and especially the more time you're around, you see more games. But and sometimes a game's 5 years old and you're still like, that's still the it game for this. You know, like Mask still kills it for like teenage superheroes. But what's funny is that like Powered by the Apocalypse feels a little crunchier these days than it used to. And that's just a time thing. I'm sure, you know, Savage Worlds felt less crunchy then, you know, so there are elements now of how time changes how we view things. But
yeah.
So the one thing I wanted to say that I didn't mention earlier was the range, right? So I kind of was talking about how, you know, like introduce yourself, have maybe 2 to 3 references that give a couple different looks at what you do. Obviously, if you're an artist, it's better to have a bigger portfolio. Craig mentioned, you know, with Bitly and all kinds of stuff, you can have links that take you to a site or a page, which is much more common.
Linktree, yeah.
Yeah. But like from what you deliver, I've had plenty of people be like, hey, I got this game, and they give you a paragraph. And they may don't say anything about who they are. You know, they're like, I got this thing. I think it'd be perfect for you. And it will have like a, and if you want to hear more, you know, let me know and we could schedule a meeting, or I'll send you a sell sheet. And then sometimes, you know, you get a sell sheet right away, or a lot of times too, I try not to like inconvenience the person. And what I mean by that is like I, not asking for more than I need, you know? So it'll be like, if they didn't show up with it, like, I'll be like, hey, you can just tell me what the game's about. And that's, then I can tell you if I want more. Because nothing's worse than being in like an hour call and they told you it was going to be 15 minutes. And you've basically said 4 times that you're like, I'm not really into this. Not really my thing. I see you got something here, but like, it's not for me or like my company, you know? And then you're like, so yeah, go ahead and finish. You know, but you almost want to, like, for the best interest of both of us, be like, hey, I'm done. I'm just done. It's like a sale. Like, if you sold them, you kind of wish they'd be like, hey, I'm just going to buy it. So quit talking. You know, I just give it to me.
Like, please stop. Stop pitching, please.
Yeah, because that's important. You know, just like it's important for the publisher, like, on the other end, I think, as I'm always like, hey, this is what I got in the pipe. You know, I mean, that can change, but, like, are you good if this is going to be 2027 or 2028? Like, you know, just like starting point, you know, because if somebody would have told me that with my first game, I'd be like, no, you know, because like if I had all my eggs in this one basket. And there's a lot of times too that people are approaching you with like, they have all their eggs in one basket, and that's fine. But it is, you are very much then being like, here's a take it or leave it. You know, like I want this, which is okay. But most of the time we are pitching like one game, but I'll get people who say like, oh, I got you. You didn't like that one. I got a card game. You like card games, or you want a board game. But then there's the things like, if you say, hey, I got this board game and it's about pirates or something and it's strategic. And I'm like, no, because I don't make strategic board games and I make nothing that deals with pirates. I don't even like pirates, you know? So just, and that's fine. It just, that might be one I just don't answer, you know?
Well, yeah. And you can, as the person who's seeking the work, you can, I mean, if you're really focused and like, it's like, these are the things you want to do, then you have to be prepared that it's going to probably be harder to get work. You want to focus, you're focused on the thing you want to do. But if you're talking to somebody and they're not, you know, interested in the thing that you're pitching or the stuff that you have to offer, you can find out what they are, like what do they have coming up that they might be looking for people to help with and all that sort of thing. And then go back and like write a little thing like that. Like, you know, I'm doing this like sci-fi game and somebody, you know, like you can see these little 2-page adventures that are going to be coming out with it at some point after, once it's all out and published, there might be people that come along and be like, oh, I really like this little universe you've created, or they might pitch something to me. And then I can say, well, you know, I'm not really looking to do that sort of thing. But if we do another one of these little booklets of 2-page adventures, like, if you're, do you like sci-fi? Do you like, you, I yeah. can point you, I can give you the PDF of the game and say like, see if this is a world that you would like to write something for. And then generate that sort of thing, make a you know, do a 1-page or 2-page little something kind of in the style of the thing. You might not know that thing exists. Like when you're going and talking to somebody, yeah. You might
especially
not,
RPGs.
You might you may not know what's on the burner with that company. Yeah. Like they may full well know that they've got this thing coming up that they're going to need some writers to do some bits and pieces of stuff.
That's why you got to know them.
That's why you got to kind of get to know them, yeah. Kind of be keeping track of what's going on with them, and when
really
they
know the industry, yeah.
And when they let slip stuff, because like. I don't know how all designers and publishers handle it, but I mean, I know for myself, I talk about like what I'm working on and what's coming up and ideas that I'm toying with all the time on my Discord. And there's a reason that most of the people who freelance write for me are in the Discord at least some of the time, because they see the stuff that's going on. And then they, whether they try to, whether it's strategic on their part, but they'll, you know, they'll engage in the discussion, and like maybe that's just their way of being like, hey, remember me, I'm here. Volunteer to do, like, I had a couple of people who did a little bit of writing for me for a supplement for Cosmic Corsairs that's coming up, and I offered them the writing gig solely on the fact that they were interested in they helped to not play test, but to kind of proof the text. Not in terms of like editing, but I gave them the GM sections as I was finishing them, because the rules were getting playtested. And I was like, I want people to read the GM section and say, like, does this have enough meat? Like, is it all make sense? Is it like how this all functions and how this little galaxy is put together? Does it work? And is it all, you know, is there like, am I glaringly missing something? Like, oh, you mention offhand this one thing, but then you never expand upon it. And they went through and did a little bit of that. So now they're familiar with the world. And I said, how would you like to write like a bunch of little player handouts that are like intercepted communications that are going between ships and planets and moon bases and everything else? And so they wrote a bunch of little handouts that are just like intended to be inspiration for the GM to be like, oh, there's like different adventure ideas in here. And here's actual like names and things that have taken place and information and some things implied, and maybe it's a mystery so the GM can fill it in. And some places, you know, some of it's very obvious because they just say that, you know, the Triarchy did this, or this starship was destroyed or whatever. And that's how they both, like, neither one of them had a credit, but they have hung around the Discord. They have gotten to know the types of games that I do and the types of things that I produce. And when I offered the opportunity to do a little something, they were like, yeah, I can do that. I mean, it didn't overwhelm them. So that's one of the things, like, when it's, as someone who's looking for the work, is, you know, finding a way to present the things that you are interested in doing, or, you know, examples of them, which helps to sell the prospective employer that, like, you know, this thing, you're not going to like be deer in the headlights when you suddenly get an assignment, because you've got something, you've already written something like that, even if it's not like for their game, but it's something like that. It's like a super crunchy kind of description of some equipment, or it's, you know, like lore for a monster. You know, like, you're comfortable writing that. Well, can you, clearly you can write lore. I'd like you to write lore for my monsters.
Yeah. It's interesting too, with you saying that, is that, like, I have a couple cards of people who are like layout people, graphic designers, who are like, I like character sheets. And, you know, you don't forget the people who are very specific.
You want the people who can make the character sheets.
Yeah, but you remember that. Like, yeah. Later on, when you're like, I need character sheets, you may not use them, but you go dig up their card. You know, like, mm-hmm. You just remember. Like, and there's all kinds of, I mean, all three of us can, like, understand that, because we've made products. Like there's levels, like, some people are great at tables, you know? And you're like, oh, I need a random generation table for 16
you
ideas.
You also want the people who are great at tables.
people who make adventures, you know, like, people who do example play. There's all these layers, mm-hmm. of like people who just do little examples throughout that maybe, or, you know, in my case, like, sometimes, like, I feel almost like I have to broach the subject. So how do you feel about that, you know, like, new to RPGs paragraph? Because I hate that one, you know, like, because it's just like, I've read it 1 billion times, and we always have to be like, this is a tabletop role-playing game. In a tabletop role-playing game, you pretend, almost like a movie, that you and your friends are in a movie, and you're actors. But you're not just actors, you're playing characters.
Nicole Kidman comes onto my movie screen every time I go watch a movie, and she tells me what a movie is before I watch it. And that's very helpful for me, okay? So I need to know.
You know, sometimes, like, Craig, like, you have so many releases. So there's times where I think I've even thought of you when I think of it, of like, somebody's got to copy and paste this shit. You know, like, they use the same paragraph.
I absolutely have. But yeah, I keep them short. I keep them short.
Yeah.
Like, the what is a role-playing game thing is usually just like a couple of paragraphs. It tells you kind of what the players do and what the GM does. And that's it. And then the other upfront intro kind of what is this is more about what is this game about, what are the types of things that your characters are going to do. Like, here's a list of 6-8 bullet points of, like, things that your characters might do when they go on their adventure, you know, and then when I get to describing like how you break down encounters and scenes and checks and stuff, I talk about like, you know, you might in a scene, you might do with these things. And I make a list of like 6 or 8 things that are like individual, like actions or like, you know, just like sequences of like, you might break into a place to steal something. You might fast talk somebody, you know, just to give them a sense of what the game kind of contents is. But like the whole, like the 2-page long, like, like really
high-minded
description of like role-playing game as an art. That's a great thing to talk about. It's wonderful in podcasts. Ben Riggs does a spectacular job of talking about role-playing games as an art form. It doesn't need to be in the front of the game book because it's more interesting to hear people talk about it like in a, you know, a dialogue, 2, 3, 4 people.
That's true.
Because then they offer ideas and they bounce off things. But you know, there's but if you know like Pete said, if you can write a clear example of play, like here's a 2-page rundown kind of how a combat goes, showing how the players speak in character and how they speak out of character and how the GM adjudicates stuff. And with like clear, like description of how you do it, like with, you know, like name colon information, like maybe you italicize certain things in order to make them stand out and just make it read like, oh, this is the rhythm of how, you know, a combat goes in this sort of a game, or this is the rhythm of whatever, gives you a sense of that sort of thing. There's so many things that you can become a specialist in, and you can be specialist in multiple things.
Yeah.
Like you can get work on a game. Like I'm going to help do the science fiction game, and I'm going to write the example of play because I'm really good at that. And I'm going to write examples for different types of trait checks. I'm good at that. And I'm good at random tables. So I'm going to give like, you know, random stuff you can, you know, smash into when you're in space table. And then, you know, whatever, like one other thing, like and so you're credited in the book as like additional design and you wrote little things, but there was a bunch of them. And so, you know, you had your voice was in there quite a bit. So you're like a pretty significant part of that publication.
Yeah. You're not always the, like, every book doesn't have to have one writer, right? I mean, sometimes we, especially like when you're kind of growing up through the indies, this is the writer and this is the graphic designer. And if they're all getting paid modularly, like it's not all a percentage or something or like a big lump sum, you can have leads and assistant or, you know, just multitude of, these are all game designers and they can, you know, you can parse that up to some people do what they want, what they're good at or what they like to do so that nobody's just doing anything that's tedious to them. It's better for everybody. So yeah, I just want to make sure I cover the range and like just the, and then there's people who somebody blew me away. Your credit to Ross Payton of RPPR. Like Ross has shown me a couple things. And when Ross has pitched me on things, like he like gives me like a 30-page laid out PDF, you know, with credits. like it's by no means, like by no means, you don't need to do any of that. And but that's a little bit of a testament to like Ross likes doing that. You know, like Ross likes to see that much proof of concept and like to, and it's not, this is the kind of example of like to them, this is like part of the process. Just like we tell a lot of people, like don't do the layout and design the game and write the book all simultaneously. Cause like, you know, there's a reason why it's much better done if it's like we do the writing and then hand the manuscript to a person to lay it out all at once. Cause you will find yourself like just the tedium of moving everything around constantly to fit each page to make it beautiful. If you do it together, but that doesn't stop that. Like,
no, I'm going to say
love doing that. You know,
we could absolutely like we personally, the three of us know people personally who write in the layout.
Yep.
And
we definitely know people personally.
Yeah,
we know. Someone else I don't know.
not efficient. They will tell you it's not efficient, but it doesn't mean that if they like it, is it wrong? Like, you know, it's like,
but you can discover a lot of things when you do that way. Yeah, you might discover like, oh, like I've got this much information and it's leaving me with this big gap. And I'm like, what should I put in there? Is there a cool table that can go there? Does it need an illustration? Yeah. Does this section need expansion? Like, is there anything that I can expand? Like you can figure that stuff out unless you're doing like what I do, which is like, it's super number crunchy. Nowadays where I try to make sure that my chapters are like even numbers of pages so that the chapter starts on the left page and it's always a 2-page spread to kick off the chapter and everything. I do that. Yeah. So I count my page numbers or my word counts, you know, pretty, I figure out, I usually have like, you know, every chapter, I have a breakdown of all the chapters and I have every chapter, it says like, it's going to be 6 pages long, but there's a page and a half of illustrations, and it's going to be this, and it's going to, you know.
Kind of sounds like an architect.
Yeah.
Very architectural.
It is very. I program. In architecture, it is called programming, like deciding what all the spaces are, what all the adjacencies are supposed to be. That's programming your building. And so I definitely program my projects now.
Pete, it was great talking to you. We got to wrap up because we have another recording coming up in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. This is great. Thanks for bringing me back on. It's been a while.
Yeah, we could have. I love the range.
There's a lot more to talking shop than it was.
So much. Yes, I like that. It was really, really fun. Pete, where can we find more of your stuff?
Yes, you can go to Imagining Games. It's got all the social links at the bottom. Obviously, the store's got a ton of things. Designing TTRPGs for Dummies just came out at the end of last month. That's at Barnes & Noble and at Amazon if you want to pick up one of those. And we're hoping Ghost in the Shell is something that turns around by the end of the year.
Cool.
I say that, and I'm like, I doubt that that's possible, but like, as I saw the deadlines they put on it, but that'll be interesting. And we have, I'm going to do my first zine. We have Teenage Ninja Fighting School that's come out for Zine Quest in February. That's made by Brendan Taylor. So I'm really excited about that. It's got a cool card mechanic thing that's going on for like, the combats feel like you're role-playing as much as you're fighting. And that's just neat because people are so used to it being like one or the other in role-playing games. So, check out imagininggames.com.
Cool. That's where you can find Pete's portfolio. Mine's at wannabegames.itch.io right now. That's where you can find our stuff. You can also find me out. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Joska. I haven't really posted there. I'm kind of off social media.
You know, I just want to mention that I used to pay more attention to people who offered to freelance stuff of like their social media, because as a publisher, it did add value when they would go talk to people. But we're all so dispersed and separated these days that it's no longer much of a factor. I'm not saying it doesn't help you as a person for your own, spreading your own interests.
Helps me know that they're a chill person.
Yeah, but publisher-wise, it used to be more of a thing. It's less of a thing now.
Yeah, so you can follow me there.
And you can find me at Nerdburger Craig on various social media. Nerdburgergames.com is the website. The games are at DriveThruRPG as well as the web store on that website. Cosmic Corsairs is, the Kickstarter is wrapped up successfully. Things are underway, but we're taking late pledges, so you can go snag stuff there if you want to be able to get the game like as fast as anyone. There's a very good chance that I'm going to be punching the PDF out to people before the holidays. So
nice.
If you, that's a great way to get the game, you know, a few months early, earlier than other people will be able to. And something to keep in mind next year is Nerdburger Games 10-year anniversary, and there's going to be stuff going on, which that's starting exciting. To figure out.
Hey, I forgot one thing. Can I plug one more thing?
Sure.
No.
When this releases, I think Chew's going to be in the bundle holding. So there's going to be a new Forge in the Dark bundle holding that starts, I think, the 9th or 10th or something. So when this pops, it's probably going on.
Okay. I'll put that into your pitch for you.
Thanks.
To be getting there. Thank you for opening and closing theme song, which is Avail by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs, and thank all of you for listening, and we'll see you back here next time. Bye!
Bye!